Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Insane in the Membrane, Edinburgh edition.
Insane in the Membrane.
Please, welcome on the stage, the man himself, Mr. Richard Gaff. Welcome, Richie.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. This is daunting.
Isn't it? Yeah, but no, it's exciting. And you're the one who doesn't open up about his feelings? Good, right in my eye line. Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant.
Welcome, man.
Thank you.
How's your festival so far? You having a good time?
I really enjoyed it. Pretty knackered. I think I'm addicted to nightmares, but that's fine. It's going good. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying theatre this year. Some might say I tried it for the last 10 years. That's sort of an in-joke, which, yeah, about 5 or 6 people got. But if they all knew my that would have blown the roof off the place, that joke right there. So I'm trying a theatre piece this year. It's going well. It's going good.
Yeah.
It's about a serious thing that happened to me in my life.
Yeah.
And so it's very autobiographical. And so it's quite hard. I'm bringing up a lot of shit every time I go on the stage.
Oh, man. Well, I saw it the other day, and genuinely, I was knackered. Just watching it. I mean, your show before, Monkey See Monkey Do, you were running on a treadmill for the entire show.
Yes.
Look at me. That, I don't go near treadmills. So just watching someone on it for an hour was just... Man, and so you go for the emotional, like, read, and by the end of it, you're just emotionally drained, physically drained.
I'm knackered. I suppose with Monkey See Monkey Do, I mean, that was... I'll just get it out now because, you know, it's gonna...
Let's do it.
It was about getting sexually abused when I was younger. And so that was, yeah, cool. It was about an awkward silence as I was expecting. And that was what the show was about. It was a comedy show about the sort of mental ramifications of that incident in my life. And I did it when I was going through it. I was very masculine. I was sort of a man. I took pride in my masculinity. But then after it happened to me, I started to question all that. And I felt very vulnerable, but I had no outlet for it. So I would run for miles and miles and miles. And so I decided about, 4 years later, 6 years later, of running and running and running, that I might try and do this in a show. And so I decided I'd run on. And people used to say, because I'd run about 10 kilometres every show. So I put it on sprint. I sprint, you know, and my knees and ankles will never recover. They're ruined. But like,
I don't think I've ever run 10K in my life.
Gathered
together.
It was mad, but I, you know, it mirrored what I was doing. But I used to sometimes run about, you know, like 15, 16, 17 miles a night. I used to be so stick thin.
Do you think it helped?
10K was actually a break from
just nipping out for milk.
Yes, absolutely. But it was crazy. Sort of saved my life. And that was the first time I started to get open about my feelings and stuff.
I think exercise is very important. I think people say, I've just said I don't go anywhere, but I do walk a lot of places. And I think sometimes I'll get bogged down at home and I'll get... Like, you get a bit depressed, you lie on your bed, and then you don't want to do anything, and then the music, you try to go, I'll put some music on, but then the music isn't in it. It's like, I know, it's all shit. Oh, watch a film. No, these are shit. And then you start getting pushed down onto the bed, and, you know, and the best thing I've ever done is go for a walk. Get out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, clear your mind.
Oh, absolutely. It's brilliant. Yeah. And that's what I used to do, but I did it to a sort of pathological sort of level. I was just running and running and running, and it was mainly so I could go to bed at night and sleep. I used to do this. This is how bad it got, like, because when I was going through it, all sort of, my world sort of came crashing down around me, and you know, everything sort of changed overnight. It was almost like your life was a before and after an event like that. And I remember I would hate going to bed because I could never sleep because I was having like PTSD sort of stuff.
Wow.
You know, and and I would never want to wake up while the sun was in the sky. Right. So, because that always made me feel depressed, almost like the day was ahead of me. Yeah, I had to wake up when it was darkness when nobody was around.
Oh, wow.
Fucking, that's not how you're looking at me now, I'm a piece of shit, but that's fine. But, no, it's not, you're right. But that was how mad it got. I would have genuinely sort of like close my eyes and have like sort of visceral, you know, flashbacks and all those kinds of things. So I'd run until I was so knackered I couldn't be bothered to think, but then I'd force myself to get up. You know, right. Before I was late, so it was dark, and so I could feel like I was ahead of the day. It was very ropey. I was ill all the time because I was sleeping. I was running myself down, all kinds of things. Yeah.
So no vitamin D and
fucked. Yeah, no. The Boots brand's a load of shit as well.
It sounds like it's almost like that cliche, like you're running away from.
Oh, absolutely.
Everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then hiding in the darkness.
Yeah. No, I was aware of the pretentiousness, absolutely. As I was doing it, do you know what I mean? I was, the sort of King Lear-esque running up to the sky sort of thing. But yeah, no, it was weird. Yeah, it was an awful time. I don't know what else to say. Yeah.
Obviously helped you. Obviously helped you get your head around shit that had gone on.
Yes,
because there
absolutely.
Is when people have been sexually abused, there is a tendency. It's never happened to me. I'm lucky, but I know many people, far too many people actually, that have been, possibly someone in here has, and I'm sorry that has happened to you, but there seems to be a tendency to blame yourself for it happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know when we've spoken before, and that was what you were dealing with.
Yeah,
you were I'm a bloke, so it must have been my fault.
Yeah, there was a period of extensive sort of, I was very young and naive, and there was a period of, there was lots of drugs involved. There was an extensive grooming period that I didn't wake up to until afterwards. And so, everything was 2020 in retrospect after an event like that. It seemed so clear that was where it was going.
Yeah,
you see what I mean?
But
at the time...
Yeah, do
you see what I mean? You're sort of swept along with it, And so that's why I've always shied away from referring to like the event as an incident. Like if you refer to it as rape, for example, that is an incident, and people's minds think that's like a one night thing, like an incident that happens.
Nothing.
But sexual abuse encompasses, and mostly when people have been raped or sexually assaulted or something, then there is a lot, it's more than just that. It usually is from somebody or whatever.
Yeah,
it usually is a grinding down.
And you knew this person beforehand?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I can't say too much.
Let's not get sued.
Yeah, that would be about. How many episodes in? How many episodes in are you?
Oh, blimey. I don't know. We're like sort of four and a half months. It's like 15. 16 maybe.
Oh, great.
And
we're
on like 30,000 downloads, so
And a nice respite from the dark Well, I mean, it was an extensive period of time. I don't really like to say, because people do get bogged down in the sort of age thing. There's a lot of shame around it. I don't really want to talk about all that kind of stuff. That's all right. But yeah, people do sort of tend to sort of cling to want to know the details, and I understand why you asked that, and that's fine. But I think to understand, and the show that I tried to do with Monkey Do was sort of it lasts for a lifetime. It's not an instant. It's not a period of time. Do you see what I mean? And it sort of stays with you for a long time. And it's the mental ramifications rather than the specific details that really stuck with me.
No closure. It's just.
Well, I got closure doing the show. I got the closure talking about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I realised in sharing it, speaking to everyone here, that it wasn't a dent in my masculinity. If anything, I feel more empowered as a man being able to talk like this now. But at the time, I would go, I'd shave my head, bald, I'd just pick fights with people in public.
Oh, wow.
Do you see what I mean?
Trying to prove your manliness.
Yeah, lashing out at the world because I didn't want anybody to see the vulnerability. And I would, if somebody would catch my eye. So, I worked in this bar in London for years. If somebody caught my eye, I would think that they saw what had happened.
Oh, wow.
See what I mean? Yeah. And so I would start looking at them like, what the fuck's your problem? I didn't mean to look at you directly, but do you know what I mean?
Sorry, madam.
But I was stereotypically sort of lashing out the world, angry sort of thing.
I think a lot of men do that. A lot of men, there's a lot of men, there's always, when I was growing up, there was that, there was always a sense of impending violence in the air, because men needed to, they didn't know how to express themselves. The only way they could do, and to like show how sort of tough and manly they were, was to start a fight, get into fights. And that's, that was all the time. And, you know, I imagine it's probably the same for you.
Never ever.
No, I'm not saying you yourself, but you've been surrounded by it.
Yeah.
There was always someone else that wanted to have a fucking go. And it's like, you know, I mean, I sound like I'm kicking off now. So it's, I've unfortunately got this accent that just sounds violent. People hear it, and they're just like, you know, like, do you want a bit of toast? I'm offering breakfast, and I'd have a shit cat and nobody in it. So yeah, I can absolutely see why you went down that path. I did as well when I was younger, just walking around thinking that I needed to be kicking off with everybody.
And it makes you think, you know, like when I look back at school, you know, I went to a state comprehensive, and you know, there were a lot of bullies. Do you know what I mean? And they would kick the shit out of you.
Back
on it, it does make you question what the hell they were going through at home.
Oh, man, really, that's it. Yeah, there was always... I went to an all-boys school, and it was like a pecking order. Everyone was bullying everybody else.
And
if you were in any way slightly... If there was someone that was, you know, slightly feminine, they would absolutely get shit rained down on them. And unfortunately, I was in that, because I was getting bullied, and then you go for someone else... And you get caught up. I mean, I think about it now, and I'm riddled with guilt. You know, like 30 odd years ago, I'm like, dickhead. But you were just trying to survive.
Yeah, you bullied to stop being bullied. It was an awful dynamic.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was awful. And then the two schools, the girls and the boys, were put together.
Yeah.
And I think it works. You know, the men and women. I know we talk about like gender equality and things like that. And yes, we do need more. There needs to be more equality, but. There's differences in men and women, and it works, because when we're together, it's like a jigsaw puzzle, and the differences come together, and we work. That's why we are the way we are. That's why we rule the world, because we work together. And so if you separate off, I don't know. It's just.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Especially when it's all men, we're just walking around with our knobs out, just going, mine's bigger than yours. And it's,
Even the teachers.
Yeah, summer holidays were rubbish.
I can show you. I know this is.
Wait, what?
I was gonna show you a photo of me when I was in like sort of peak, you know, because it's sort of like it can hit you. You've got a period of time, but there was a period in life where it sort of hit me hard.
Mm.
Like I sort of managed to repress a lot of the thoughts and the sort of, and then it just came out. I just remember this one time, just really focusing, like ignoring something, like going through life ignoring something that happened.
Yeah.
And then one day I just decided I would just like turn the back of my mind towards the front, and almost I knew from that moment on it was it was bad. But I'll show you just how, and we'll carry on talking because I'm aware showing a photo during a podcast is a bit of a faux pas. But I'll show you just how
we'll put it on the social medias.
Yeah. We'll I'll show you just how mad I looked when I was shaving my head and going through all this kind of stuff. Right, check that out, and I'll pass it on there.
Oh wow!
I look mad, right?
That's very sort of. That's American very, History X.
It really is, and I think people probably got that vibe from it as well.
Yeah, very kind of Third Reich.
Yeah,
Bronson.
Yeah, it really is.
You need to see this.
Yeah. I mean, I could, you know,
have a look. Yeah, show.
Look at that.
Show the group. Yeah.
Yeah, man, right?
Imagine
no one
that,
was fucking with that. Do you know what I mean?
But imagine that coming up and asking you if you've got the time.
that's mad. I look back on that and I see nothing but vulnerability, whereas everyone else probably
isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When you see the biggest guy, like you see these guys about the gym all the time, they're massive and they're lifting things and they're pushing things. And I always see that as like, oh, wow, man, look, you've got some shit going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like when someone alpha males you, which I've never been an alpha male, I've never been that guy, but you see someone comes in and then they shake your hand and you go, oh, thanks, mate. Yeah, you just crushed my fingers to dust. Why? You know,
the insecurity thing.
Yeah.
I always never know what to do.
Well, in my head, I'm all like, well, you're already lost, mate, because I don't care.
Yeah.
You're putting all this extra effort in, so you clearly feel insecure.
Yeah.
Well done, mate.
My dad used to, very masculine man, used to say, like, you have to crush the other person's hand with a shaker. And he used to always get me when I was young to punch through his hand. So it's like if anyone ever gives you shit, punch through, you aim for the wall behind their head, sort of thing.
Jesus.
And I always remember like when I was little. It would just be
like, how old were
you? Oh, I don't know. If anyone, I remember going to secondary school, a rough secondary school, and I remember my sister, Ned, that she was, was just like, oh, if you don't fucking do this, you'll fucking get battered and all that shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember going into day one of school and thinking, well, I need to have a fight so everyone leaves me alone. I remember going on the bus and just getting in a fight for no reason.
Well, there was an element of that. When I was at school, I remember someone telling me, when we left, and there was a guy called Ian Duffy, unfortunately he's sadly no longer with us, but I remember being out with him and he just said, well, you were seen as the third hardest in the school, Rich. I'm like, how? I never had a fight. But I used to just wander around scowling and just going like, what the fuck are you looking at? Because everybody else was quite insecure, I kind of rose up the ranks accidentally.
Did you ever actually have a fight?
No.
There were so many people in our school that were like number one, and you're like, they never actually had a fight.
Everyone was number one.
I'm getting beaten up all the time. I should at least be number seven.
I don't remember the last time I managed to eat my lunch. Don't get as far as the playground. In our school as well, a few years ago, there was a guy, I can't remember his name, but he did a big documentary about all the football hooligans, the top boys in all the firms. And there was the Sim twins that were part of the Chelsea Headhunters. And it was like, these guys were notorious, evil, they've been in and out of prison. And they were in my year at school. But I was seen as the third hardest. Because I just wander around doing that all the time.
It's crazy. Crazy looking back, we had a guy in our school who, what was his name? But everyone was sort of scared of him. And he would do this thing where he'd get the aerosol can. And he'd spray it on the back of his hand until the can was empty. And they would like freeze his hand and his whole hand would like scab over. It was like mad.
What?
And then he'd like cut it in class and he'd like with his fingernails and it would just like bleed and scab. And his whole back of his hand was just like scarred. It was mental.
Yeah.
He'd do it like all the time.
Oh dude, there's some shit going on at home.
Yeah, oh definitely.
Oh
definitely.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely a sign, isn't it? If you're self-harming in front of everybody, just to show everyone. Anyone, are you lot all right with this?
I know, it's very...
No, you're right, I can do some...
If it gets too dark, I'll do some pullback reveals. Like, I was having a wank the other day. And then I left Tesco. So if it gets too dark, I'll do a couple of them.
We'll just show up, we'll throw a couple of gags in there. Yeah. But that's definitely... And he was trying to show you... don't fuck with me, I'm crazy.
Yeah. Pretty sure I had like this awful dream once where he was like, give me a hand job, and I was like, oh, but I couldn't stop it. I was like, what the fuck's this? You're swatting it away with your hand. You know when you have a dream where you can't punch someone, but you really want to punch them, but you can't swat this like.
And you're picking
this. I wonder where he is. I hope he's well, wherever he is.
We should find you.
Yeah.
As you're picking the scab off of his, as he's wanking you off.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's too much, isn't it?
And then I left Tesco.
Oh, man, I've got to remember where I am. It's because there's no windows. I forget. Oh, dude. But that's it. That's what we grew up with. That kind of having to test each other and survive. And then we had our parents as well. Like my dad's dad was a transvestite, but they never talked about it. He was probably gay, it turns out, but never talked about it. The only way my dad realised, he saw my dad, his dad one day dressed in his garms. He'd gone round there one day. I was a baby. I've heard this story now. I was a baby. They went round there. The car was on the drive, so he must be in. So I looked through the letterbox and my dad thought, oh, grandma's in. So I went round the back to be greeted by his own dad dressed in his, like what looked like grandma's clothes. And then when my granddad died, some four fellas turned up to carry the coffin that nobody had ever seen before. Nobody knew. My granddad had a secret life, it turned out. My dad described them as being very fruity. So that's what my dad said. Like, I know it's bad, but that's what he said.
Well, it was the time.
It was the time. Yeah, that's absolutely. How it was back then. I mean, I remember there was a TV show, and the guy in it was an electrician who was gay. And then every time we'd be out and someone who looked gay, my dad would go, oh, look, electrician. So, yeah, that was in you. That was, it was like mocking it almost when we were kids. It's only as you grow up, you try to go, actually, no, that was fucking shit.
Well, it was mad. I mean, when I grew up, like, gay was the word for uncool, really. That was after the generation where gay became like, that's gay.
That's
man.
Gay, man.
Like, yeah, oh, I scored an own goal today.
Oh,
yeah,
that's gay. So gay. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah, yeah, yeah. Imagine, it was coming away from sexuality, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. It was sort of, it no longer meant that. It meant something else, but no more better in terms of its the stigma surrounding it.
Yeah.
But it was second nature.
It was, yeah, he just said it. Exactly, yeah. You didn't connect sexuality to it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
He just said it. And it's only until like, now we're older and we're going, oh, shit. Yeah, that was...
I have to ask. So did they turn up in drag to carry the coffin?
They came up in full attire. Yeah.
And how old were you then?
I was I would have been 8.
Wow.
9. And it was just, yeah. Are you lot all right? Are you okay? Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. Yeah, don't worry about that.
Yeah,
we're talking about feelings. Have a wee if you need to, man. Sit there weeing. That'd be terrible, wouldn't it?
Go to spray the aerosol on his hand and have a vicious wank.
Well, this is taking a turn. You're like, why does this always happen to me?
Oh, God.
There we are. Yeah. Well, we are really opening up, aren't we? We really are. It's nice.
So these are all the fans of the podcast. That's awesome.
Well, I think so. They've been dragged in from the square. I'm not sure. I've had a couple of people in that are fans, but I don't know. Are you two all right? Do you need to go? Because I know you said
soon,
you had
like
to.
5 minutes. I really don't want to leave.
You're having a nice time?
But
yeah,
you are.
I'm having a great time, yeah. I've
got
to.
I've got
a train
at
3:30, Lincolnshire.
Really, really?
Yeah.
What's in Lincolnshire?
That's how you live.
Just hills and incest people.
Great.
Hills and incest people.
And how much is a ticket?
I'll stay.
Okay. Oh, swap round.
Yeah.
Wait, no, everyone will leave.
Oh, no. Maybe.
I killed someone once.
You wasn't there. That's why my facade is a support worker, but really, bumping people off. Yeah, like a shit Dexter. So, well, this is take. I didn't expect this. This is only the second live one I've ever done.
It was first.
Huh? Yeah. Bobby Mayer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
He's lived a life.
He has lived a life. Prostitutes and.
I
do a great disservice just by saying that one word. Go listen to the podcast and find out for yourselves what happened to Bobby Mann. So this is the first one, the second one we've ever done live, so you never know what's going to happen. You never know how interesting it's going to be or how into it people are. So, but this has been lovely, Rick. So
yeah, I was always going to take it down to a very, very low sort of dark place.
But that's it. That's what this is all about. Yeah. It's about talking. It's about people that sound like us. Talking about over like, feelings and bad things, especially the way I sound. I sound like a man that's never opened up in his life, but I had counselling because I used to just fuck up every relationship I was ever in. Like I cheated on people and I didn't know what I was doing. And I was trying to mess it all up. I was married for a bit and I fucked that up. And I took full responsibility. I mean, this is clearly me. I'm clearly the one doing all this. So, I'm making people's lives miserable. So what am I going to do? I'm going to counselling. And I urge you to go and do it. And if you've never done it, go and talk to someone. It's absolutely brilliant. And you'll go there closed in. You'll be like, well, I don't need to be here. I'm fine. But then as you start to talk and start to open up, things come tumbling out. And you'll feel so much better. I can promise you. Have you ever had to go counselling?
No.
No? Never felt the need?
I probably have felt the need.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah, I think people should. I think everybody should. Even if you feel you don't need to, just go and talk to someone, you know. And chances are something will come out and you'll feel lighter. It's amazing.
Mm.
But you've had counselling.
Oh God, I've sent all the counsellor's kids to college.
Paid off mortgage after mortgage.
Yeah. Oh God, I'd probably have a savings account.
All these shows, all your counsellors investing in your future.
It's funny, like though, I sometimes think I need to get a therapist to explain why I keep lying to my current one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I sort of want them to like know that it's that sort of people pleasing sort of
thing.
I want them to know that they're doing a good job. So I'll just lie and maybe just pretend I'm getting better when I'm not.
You're an empath. I'm the same with mine. I remember halfway through, one of the sessions, and he just goes, just stop fucking about. I'm like, what do you mean? You went, what do you really feel? What do you really think? And it was the same because I was going, I was telling him what he wanted to hear. So then
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
It's a great feeling making a therapist laugh.
Exactly. That was it. This treat is a gig. Yeah. This cost me 100 quid.
It's like a fucking. It's like the Scunthorpe Jonglers trying to make a therapist laugh. Do you know what I mean? It's like
every if there's someone in front of you, even now, I'm treating it like a gig because it's a podcast and it's not supposed to be laugh out loud riot every 5 seconds, but because it's an audience. Mm-hmm. I can't help it.
Yeah.
I must make them laugh. I must do something. I must bring joy to the masses. And so when you're in your counsellor, you're just like, you might as well walk in there with big floppy shoes and a squeaky nose.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm always like, I always say, because when you start out, you're trying to do comedy, you have to sign up to all these bastard competitions and all these like gigs that you sign away, you have to sign, and then they'll put it all online while you're like figuring it out, while you're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
You know, and it takes, you know, the famous Russell Brand quote was, you have to do 1,000 gigs before you even know what the hell you're doing.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Well, the first 1,000 are online, so that's you know, that's brutal for me.
Yeah.
And so every time I'm in it takes about 10 sessions for me to even admit that I'm a comedian, because I just worry they're going to go home, see me dying on my hole online, do you know, and then come back in and just think I'm shit the whole time. do you see what I mean?
I absolutely see exactly what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's only in the last couple of years where I've just gone, I actually feel like a comedian. Like, I kind of go, actually, I've earned my place. Yeah, you get imposter syndrome because you just feel like you're full of shit. And then one day it clicks. You go, no, I've actually put the work in. I've actually driven the miles. Like people say, like they only see us doing our like 20-minute bit, and they go, well, you just work for 20 minutes a day. But you know, it's the stress beforehand. And we're very privileged to do what we do. We're very privileged to do what we do. We travel the world making people laugh. That's a privilege. But it still comes with its own stresses.
Oh, absolutely. Highs and lows.
Yeah, man. Yeah, and it's the amount of times I've just gone, I hope the gig gets pulled.
Yeah.
As I'm on the way to the gig, like, what? Why are you doing it?
Yes. Oh, it's mad. I mean, there's times I've gone off stage, and you know when you do a gig where everything just makes sense.
Yeah.
Like every sort of look that you give, everything you say just seems to make sense. You go to stage, you're like, that's why I do it. That's the feeling.
Yeah.
That's why I do it. For every one of those, there's 10. Oh my fucking god, what am I doing? You know, like mad. Like, I've had gigs that have stayed with me. I mean, I remember having this, I just won the Comedy Award, and I'd gone down, and I'm probably the most niche act to ever win the Comedy Award.
Oh, gotcha.
I know there's a few people who would rival that, but usually it's an award that rewards sort of commercial potential, would you say?
Yeah, definitely, absolutely.
And you know, like you know, there's a lot of people like, you know, Frank Skinner, Lee Evans, all these people, you know, so I'm like talking about, you know, comedies revolving around sexual abuse, not going to make its way immediately onto television, but I remember going down, and they did do the showcase in London on the West End stage, and it was my first gig after winning the award, so that a lot of pressure, and I go down and I do this gig, and it was the Lyceum where the Michael Jackson musical is on, do you know the one on the Shaftesbury Avenue, and sold out. It was at 2,000 seats.
Oh, wow.
Could have heard a pin drop, and it was awful. It was so awful that somebody, I think I made the mistake of breaking the fourth wall. So I did about 10 minutes in silence, and then I did a joke which got like a titter, like 10 out of 2,000. And I went, oh, I maybe should have opened with that. I just made that like as a little joke, because I got a reaction. And then somebody heckled. And then I did a terrible put down where I basically just said, you're a fucking cunt. Obviously, 2,000 people think, no, you're a cunt, shut your mouth. And then they started booing.
What?
And they started booing me, right? Wow. And then the chorus of boos, like, and it was pitch black, the lights were shining, I couldn't see anything. All I heard was boos coming out the fucking... Geez. And then at one stage, this woman, about 65, yeah, who just was so appalled by what I was talking about, saying, doing, trying everything, was out of seat going, get off the stage! Get off the stage!
It's like a horrible stress dream.
Get off the stage! Yeah, get off the stage. And then I was just like, whoa, calm, everyone, shut the fucking calm down. I used to do this joke, basically, like, because of the stuff I do is very weird, very niche, I used to do a joke where I go out in the audience and I dress someone in, like, as a joke, I dress someone in like, a cowboy hat. Or a stupid hat or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then later on, I'd interact with the audience and be like, stupid hat, mate, where'd you get that? Good joke.
Yes, good joke.
But he was so offended by my set, when I went to the audience, he went, nice hat, mate, you've taken all of the costume off. Because he was like, I'm not getting involved in this. And it was like, great hat, mate, where's the hat? Where the fuck's that? It's a joke. And anyway, it was so bad, and I eventually just got up on stage about 80 minutes. And this was, you know, this was a stellar bill of comics, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah,
I was
yeah,
sandwiched
yeah.
in the middle, like this, you know, and people probably thinking, was that the one that won? Do you see what I mean? And then I ended up just saying, you know, chorus of boos, all right, guys, I'll level you, this hasn't gone well, but I'm going to play you a video, like a little video, because I do a lot of PowerPoint stuff in my work, I'm going to play you a little video, and this usually lands every single time, so let's forget the first 80 minutes, and let's just try and watch this video without, you know, and I think they were like, okay, let's see what it
yeah, got. Yeah, yeah.
And I played the video, and it was the first time I realised it was about 4 minutes long, because it was just silence, right, and it was like this thing I used to do, which, it's how I describe it, it was like I would show photographs of me and my dad, and they would like flick through.
Oh, yeah,
but they would progressively, the folks of me and my dad would get progressively weirder as it would go along, basically. I'll leave it at that. but I realised, God, this is going on, and they're not laughing. No, they're not getting this. And then it just cuts out, and the furthest back voice in the live scene, like the furthest back, I just hear this very faint, you're shite, mate. right from the fucking back. That was all right. See you later. I'm off. And then I remember going backstage, and Andrew Maxwell was there. And he like looked traumatised for me.
Yeah,
and he was
yeah.
eating a bag of crisps and he just went, crisp? Yeah. And then, the next day, I'm on the tube and I'm going down and my run in the London Soho Theatre, it was opening that night, the day after I opened my show for like a full, and I was in a bad place.
That's
and I got
sad,
hammered
you,
that
yeah.
night, hammered to sort of just forget it. And I opened the Evening Standard, and on page 3, headline, Fringe Star Tanks at London Debut.
Oh,
and a
man.
Picture of my face in the paper. And I'm like, oh my fucking God. And then I look over, and the woman next to me on the tube's reading the article with my face there. And I genuinely am like, oh my God, I'm on the tube.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking
everyone's reading
this article. Hey, you think
everyone's
on that page?
Yeah, it was brutal. And then I was like, God. And then they released it online, tagged me in the fucking article. And then I think the guy who was like, the heckled me to begin with, but funniest genital warts. Which is pretty funny, so I took
yeah,
this comment.
I love it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't want to post this.
Yeah. I should have left that anecdote after the crisp thing. Got around
with no, the crisp. No, it just shows you how brutal
yeah.
this is. Like when you come up to Edinburgh and like we've been working on our shows, we've been trying to put things together, and you want to be known for your work. You want people to come to the show and then they're gonna go, oh, they want to go away, go, I really enjoyed that. I'm glad I invested my time and my money into that. And then when you get a reviewer come in and they might see you on an off day. Like I say to you, I had 2 people in one day, another day I had 9. You know, I've had a lovely weekend, lovely full houses, but it's up and down. If they'd have come on the day and I had 2, there was one the other day, it was 9 people in, they weren't really giving me a lot, so I just started to tell them how much the set cost. Like, flowers were £4. I've got a clock on the back, and I was like, well, I was going to put a battery in the clock, but I don't want you idiots to know what the time is, actual time, so I've left it at that, and they were just like going, oh, okay, fair enough. So the reviewer coming to listen to that, it's not a reflection of the show.
Yeah,
this weekend,
yeah.
Like yesterday, I'm not one to brag, Richie, right? But this yeah. yesterday, Stand Innovation, right? Yeah, now.
No, just.
But yeah, yesterday was a standing ovation, so it's up and down. And if there was a reviewer in the old days, there's two people, and they go, like, that's a shit. But then yesterday, people were like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. So it's not a reflection, is it?
They've just
seen you do that one show.
Yeah.
And now they go, well, you're shit, mate. You go, well, you're not shit, because you won the award.
Yeah. It's just the ins and outs, and something. So sometimes you have an audience that get it. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you have a bad day. So, you know, there's all kinds of elements that go into it.
It's very emotional, very emotional. But again, we don't forget that it's a privilege to do what we do. And you know, there's other people. I've used to be a bus driver and a van driver, and I've done actual work. You know, I've not just done this. I'm not just a clown forever. I know it's like to have a proper job with a proper boss. So I don't take this for granted, you know. But it is emotional. It is exhausting, especially now. And now you've got your new show, Baby Reindeer.
Yes.
Which is another emotional show.
Yeah.
Which I saw the other day, and again I was like, you must be exhausted doing these shows where you put everything out. The honesty was what got me the most. Do you want to tell them?
Yeah. Well, it, alongside. Everything else.
Is that quite the line?
I was stalked over a number of years, about 6 years of my life. I was stalked really quite considerably, and you know, that's what my show this year is about. But it coincides with the all the other messy stuff I've been telling you about, and it sort of was just a messy. I mean, I look back. I'm in my late 20s. I look back at my 20s, and I think, what a fucking mess.
Absolute same.
Yeah.
I had children young. I had children when I was 20 years old, and I wasn't ready to have children, but I had them. And you know, to start with, we were fine. The mum and I, we stayed together for a couple of years, and it was fine. And then resentment started to set in, because there's other reasons why I became a parent. You know, there was complicated. Like, she'd said one thing, and then something else happened. She said she was on the pill, and I said, okay. And then she wasn't. So,
I like needed the hand motion. Because
obviously there's responsibility when they go, well, why did you just assume he's on the pill? Why didn't you decide? I did. I actually said, we should get condoms. And she said, no, you don't need them. What was happening was is that she wanted to have kids and wasn't bothered about who or what. We're just the next guy that came along. She was going to have a baby. And she wasn't. She didn't care if he stayed around or not. She wanted a baby really badly. So I came wandering in, and I met her, and we had a lovely time. And then that was her plan. And then she got pregnant. And then she's like, look, you know, we actually fell in love, which was nice. You know, it was only a kid, but you know, we fell in love. And I'm like, yeah, okay, let's do it. Yeah, you know. And then as we went on over the next couple of years, I was like, oh, hang on a minute, that was fucking shit what you did. And then resentment set in, and then that. So the 90s is just a mess of failed relationships. And me trying to make that work, and then not making it work, and then cheating on her, and going back to the absolute carnage, because I hadn't dealt with stuff from the beginning, you know. So absolute mess.
It was mad. Yeah, it was just mad. I just, you know, I'm hoping when I hit my 30s that it's going to be.
How old are you now?
29.
Are you 29?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I thought you were older than that.
That's what, you know, sexual abuse does to you. But
actually, ages you. That's a really shit thing to say. Wow, you're
the fuck,
mate.
I'm worn out. the show's not being stalked. That's, you know, and it was a crazy period.
Well, it's because there's stuff in it as well, because the way the show goes is that there's a moment where you're talking about, mate, like some of the things at the beginning you just thought this woman was interested in you, and so you were kind of, you know, you were interested in her.
I didn't want it to be sort of like a victim narrative, like, you know, I could have given this one-sided story where, you know, I was the perfect victim and this happened out of nowhere and it had nothing to do with me, but you know, I'll hold my hands up to the faults that I made. I was working in a bar. I was in shave head masculine mode. You know, and I could tell that she was an eccentric. I could tell that you know, she you know, had a sort of mild infatuation, and I certainly egged that on.
Yeah.
And I did that because I was feeling, you know, like I had to hide away, and I did that. But that doesn't mean that it didn't make everything a lot worse.
Yeah.
And then it came a point where I felt like, you know, I'd more the revenge had more than been made up for what I'd done at the start. But but yeah, it was an exhausting, awful period of time.
Yeah,
it took ages to sort out as well.
Like, yeah, and ongoing as well.
Yeah, ongoing.
Mad. I remember seeing a girl. I was with somebody, but I was having an affair with this girl, and it got really intense really quickly, and she'd be like, I'm not proud of that. I'm not sitting there going, oh, what a fucking legend. I didn't know what I was doing, I wasn't happy where I was, and I should have been honest, I was a coward, and I didn't sort that out. I just met someone else, and then was trying to make myself happy with that person, and then it all got complicated, and then she started to turn, and she was like, right, because she knew I was with somebody as well, but she'd be like, right, she goes, well, you're going to come and see me today. She'd bring me at 9 a.m. every day, and she'd go, you come and see me today. I said, I can't come to see you today. She goes, you have to come and see me today, or else I'm going to tell her. You've got 10 minutes. And there's that pressure building up, and you're like, fuck, which I fully take responsibility for. That's my fault for causing this shit. But the stress of it, you kind of...
What happened? Did you just have to confess?
In the end, I confessed, yeah. I had to, because it just got relentless. She'd turn up at the house and...
Yeah, well.
And then the text I'd get, I love you, and then a barrage of you're a cunt and you're a shit and you're this and you're that, and it became fucking, it was a mess. And like I say, I take full responsibility for it. You know, I created this problem, but it was hard. You know, and that's part of when I was doing counselling. It was like to turn around and say that was my fault. I'm a fucking dickhead. It's the hardest thing I've ever had to do, because you always want to blame somebody else. You always want to be like someone else's fault.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to go, no, this is you. You did this.
Yeah.
And now you've made two people miserable because you're miserable.
Yeah.
And it took that, I think, being honest with yourself is where you need to start. And you know, you're probably all very cool, rounded individuals. And I'm talking now, you're going, what is he going on about? I told you, I've only done two of these live. I don't know. Just be honest with yourselves. I think that seems to be where you started. You sort of went, actually, there's a bit of me that was, this is my fault, to a certain extent.
Absolutely. And you know, it wouldn't be unfair to just paint her as a remorseless psychopath, because, you know, she's a vulnerable human being as well. Mm.
I don't know. Makes a difference to the Lyceum.
Where were you that day at the Lyceum? Could have done with that.
Just laughing away.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's all messy. It's all black. It's never black and white.
No, absolutely. I think that's what I've learned as well. It's not with human beings. There's so much grey area. There's so much. Human beings are more fluid than we're allowed to express. You know, there's so much going on. You know, it isn't just black and white, like you say.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the problem with the legal system, I would say as well, in the sense that, you know, usually when it comes to stalking and harassment, they need something credible. They need something like, you can't just feel threatened. They need some evidence. They need proof that you are threatened. And then that is the problem with the legal
system, and you go to them and go, well, she's saying this and she's saying that.
Yeah, and they're like, well, they're just texts. They're just insults. They're just this. They're just that. Right. This is just her saying she loves you. Do you know what I mean?
It's
nothing they can hang on to. That's not evidence. That's not first degree evidence to them. And so it's this weird thing where you almost... The thing that I found most shocking about it is you almost have to like sort of hope that something slightly bad happens.
Yeah, right.
So that it will be the end.
Yeah,
you know, it's a crazy situation.
But it's funny, isn't it? It's that it needs to go to that nth degree, doesn't it? The extremes. I put up a post on Facebook. I posted for my solo show called Death Becomes In 4:30 in the wee room up there. on it, I put a quote from last year. Last year, I was quoted by the list as being a woke feminist geezer, which I thought was quite a funny thing. Quite, you know, the words together, quite a juxtaposition. That's quite funny. Put that on the poster this year. We did a boosted post on Facebook. The shit that I got, just people just going, how are you a feminist? Why are you calling yourself a feminist? And I'm not, it's in quotes, someone else said it. And the last time I looked, I don't describe myself as that, although I am. But, and I looked at the comments, last time I looked at it, they were shouting at each other about genital mutilation. Yeah. And then some fella's just taken a proper dislike to me, and he's gone and watched everything that's out online, and it's all shit. I'm not pleased with any of it. I can't watch myself, it's hard. And he's come back, he's saying, you're not a comedian, you're this and you're that. And he's just this tirade of stuff. Now, my girlfriend, Jade, has got access to all of my social media. Because when I met her, I said to her, look, I know what happens. When I get depressed and when I get low down, I look for affirmation from women. I'll text. There's certain people I know that if I text them, they'll be like, and they're the same. They'll be like, oh, because we have this sort of flirty relationship. So I'm like, I want you to have access. So I don't do that sort of thing. So now, I know that's a cunt thing to do. So I don't do it. But she's got all the access. So she sees all the messages, and then she's like. So she deletes them all. So this guy's gone to great lengths to just give this long story with paragraphs and just really why I'm the biggest shitbag on the planet. And she just deleted it. And then he comes back and goes, oh yeah, deleting it like a bitch, are you? Let's hope no one deletes you on stage, motherfucker.
What does that mean?
And I'm like, it's just a poster from a show. It just says feminist on it, you dickhead.
What's his problem?
I don't know. And that's it. It's just that people, you don't know what the problem is. Like the woman that was stalking you. You don't know where that comes from. Why is she like that? You know?
Yes. Because exactly.
There's obviously something else going on behind the scenes. There's obviously something happening to him.
Yes.
So I can't go at him and go, well, fucking come on in. But I'm such a feminist, the fuck you see outside. So, yeah, I don't know, man. It's a mess, isn't it? Human beings are a mess.
Walk off.
Yeah, I'm going to have a walk off, yeah. What you got in your coffee? Almond milk. Ah, nice. You know, actually, yeah, you can't use almonds anymore. Blah, 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 blah. I've got oat in one. Ah, bastard. They're more sustainable than this. It's hard, isn't it? I mean, I'm sitting here wearing clothing. It's definitely come from slave labour. So now I'm going, oh, so woke. How are you? You know, that's what it is. We're all trying to save the planet. We've all got mobile phones. People have died for your iPhones.
Yeah, for those listening at home, I'm wearing nothing but wheat.
And my lovely seaweed hat.
Oh, man. Rich, this has been fantastic.
Thanks for having me.
Any questions? Anyone got any questions at all? Anyone want to just go, you fucking bellend, Rich. It's not here for me. Question.
So what is a healthy way, then, to respond to a gig, whether it goes well or badly? Because that must be the advice that everybody at this festival wants to hear.
A healthy way to respond to a gig, if it's a bad gig?
Yeah.
Or a good one? Yeah. Do you mean online, or do you mean just at the gig at the time?
I think, when you go off stage, instead of beating yourself up or celebrating yourself as the best thing in the world.
Right, yes.
It's a good question. To the bad gigs, Ticket to America, buy a gun. it's you just have to know it's temporary. You learn to laugh at the bad gigs. In fact, I enjoy telling the stories of me dying on my hole. That is the expression, by the way. It's not a weird. It does sound weird.
It does sound weird, dying on my hole.
That is the expression the comedians use when they have a bad gig. I prefer telling those stories to the ones where you're like, I had a great gig, because no one wants to hear somebody just being an arrogant wanker. Do you see what I mean? So they learn with time. You just have to know that with time you learn to deal with them and they become funny. Do you see what I mean? I can tell you loads and loads of death gigs, and I actually learned to love them and to be sort of proud of being going to that sort of death. But you just have to know it's temporary.
I think you also take solace in knowing that you're not the only one that's gone through it. Like every single comedian that you've seen, all the famous ones, they've all died on their asses. Lee Evans, Michael McIntyre, all the way down the ages, they've died on their asses. And you sort of go, oh, okay, you get your head around it, and go, oh, I'm not the only one.
Yeah,
happens to everyone. Which sounds shit, you go, oh, good, I'm not suffering alone. But it you do get some kind of solace from it.
Yes,
you
know? Absolutely.
I did a gig, and it was like silent. It was totally silent. And you get to the point, you're just a drone. You're not even like, there's no highs or lows in your accent, in your voice. It's like, and then I did a thing, and then I did a thing. I just heard this voice about going, oh. Oh God. Oh, the other one is where you hear the hand dryer in the toilet going.
John Kearns has this really funny bit where he talks about opening for Russell Kane. So John Kearns, very absurdist sort of comedy. Yeah. Russell Kane, quite brilliant, but quite mainstream. So probably not the sort of crossover, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Kearns says like 15 minutes of silence, and at the back he hears the of a can opening. And he must have thought that this guy was like, right, he's smuggled some cans into the King's Theatre. He's just going to wait for that applause break. Ha ha ha!
50 minutes. Years,
I just had to do it.
Oh man, Richard Gadd, thank you so much. You've sold out your run.
I have. We might be doing some extra shows, so stay tuned.
If you get a chance, if you see it come up, Baby Reindeer, Richard Gadd, I urge you to go and see it. It's fantastic. It will me trying to describe it will not do it any justice at all. Richard Gadd, thank you so much. Thank you for you guys for coming along. I know live podcast, we don't really know what is it. I don't really know, especially people of my generation. So it's all new. And thank you for coming. Like I say, it's the second one I've done live. Hopefully you've enjoyed yourselves and taken something from it. And hopefully you don't think I'm a complete dickhead for the shit I've told you. So, cool. Brilliant. I've been Rich Wilson. Thank you for coming to Insane in the Membrane. We are out every Thursday, 6 p.m. You can get it on Spotify, Acast, all of the places you get your podcast. Thank you for coming. Richard Gadd, round of applause for Richard Gadd. Thank you very much. Thank you again.
From Dark Horse Digital, shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.